This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 17th, 2019, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, Osage Park will cover 55 acres in Bentonville. We'll talk with one of the people behind the concept that will merge wetlands, music, and more in the heart of the city. And we'll get an idea of what to expect Saturday night in Bentonville when two distinct kinds of music from India share a stage for a once-in-a-lifetime experience. That's ahead. You can take Ozarks at Large with you by subscribing to our free podcast. Services like Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Apple TV, and TuneIn offer the podcast. And you can listen to the show by asking your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large through TuneIn. And you can find entire editions of our show, as well as individual stories and interviews, at ozarksatlarge.com. Also, we have links at ozarksatlarge.com that allow you to easily share those stories through social media or email. This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Health reported 120 flu-related deaths in the state last year, classified as a moderate flu season. Of those, 78 were elders, 40 were children, 2 were in between adults. Dr. Jennifer Dillahay, Medical Director for Immunizations at the Arkansas Department of Health, says October is the best time to get vaccinated to protect against influenza.
It takes about 2 weeks for the immune system to develop protective immunity from the vaccine. So we want people to go ahead and get vaccinated now so that as the flu season increases, they're protected.
Dillahay says 5 standard formulations are available, which are updated to match viruses expected to be circulating in the United States this year. One vaccine contains no live virus. Another is a live weakened virus administered as a nasal spray.
That one is for people who are age 2 years old through 49 years of age. The other flu vaccines, the inactivated kind, there's various formulations. The inactivated ones have a standard dose, and then there is a high dose, and then there is a standard dose that's adjuvanted. The high dose and the adjuvanted vaccine are both for people who are 65 and older.
An adjuvant is an ingredient added to a vaccine for those who may have a lower protective immune response after a flu vaccination. Reaction to high-dose vaccines is more frequent, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, and similar to standard flu vaccines may include redness at the injection site, headache, muscle aches, and malaise. But Dillahay says getting a shot, which is free under most insurance, is worth it.
Now, the flu vaccine in a good year is about 50% effective in completely preventing the flu. So it's still possible to get the vaccine and still get the flu. The great benefit of the vaccine is shortening the duration and the severity of the flu if people do get it and helping keep people out of the hospital, as well as helping them survive the flu if they get it.
If you have questions about which flu vaccine is best, talk to your doctor, pharmacist, or other healthcare professional. Next summer, a new 55-acre park in Bentonville will open for play, fishing, and more. Plans for Osage Park were revealed yesterday by the Walton Family Foundation. The green space will be on I Street near Thayden Field. Allison Jumper, program officer with the Walton Personal Philanthropy Group, says Osage Park will be in a spot where it can be used easily by a large number of people.
According to the city, about 58% of Bentonville residents live west of Walton. And so this green space will provide those people and residents, all residents of Bentonville, but especially those on the west side of Walton, access to recreational opportunities that aren't necessarily there at this point.
There's going to be kayaking, fishing, wetlands. What all is included in this 55 acres?
So, yeah, just those that you mentioned, paddle sports, so canoeing, kayaking, paddle boarding will be available on the lake. Additionally, there will be a multi-use grass lawn for grass volleyball, pickleball courts. There's a small stage for performing arts, very intimate venue, a pavilion, and then there'll be native plantings there, boardwalks through the wetland system.
Take me through the stages. What happens next, and when can we come play?
Well, it's an active construction site now. Again, it's about 55 acres, so it's going to take a bit to build. But we're shooting for summer of 2020 for some of these features to be open, and those will largely be the community gathering spaces.
I think some people might be surprised to find that there's a wetland system there. It sounds like it's in the middle of town.
That's right. It is. It's adjacent to I Street, just on the east side. We have about 12 acres of wetlands there, and those wetlands are currently functioning to help the water quality that runs into the Illinois River ultimately. But we've done other things in the park to augment water filtration that will further the water quality.
And it's also being constructed with the idea that anybody can be able to access the amenities.
That's right. Yep. We're building facilities that will be accessible for all ages and abilities so that everybody has something to come and enjoy there.
All right, Allison Jumper, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Allison Jumper is a program officer with the Walton Personal Philanthropy Group. Yesterday, the Walton Family Foundation announced plans for Osage Park in Bentonville. The Eureka Springs Historical Museum is staging the 11th annual Voices from Eureka's Silent City Living History Tour at the City Cemetery. Debbie Quigley-Smith, a museum board member, has scripted the historic cemetery walk. This year's theme is Unmarked Graves.
Featuring the people who played a vital role in Eureka Springs but were buried in pauper's graves or potter's field.
Portrayed are department store owner W.D. Wadsworth, who also served as town undertaker. The story of a family searching for the unmarked grave of a young mother stricken with tuberculosis seeking healing in Eureka will also be performed. And also featured, the life of Richard Banks, the last African-American resident of Eureka's early 20th century black district.
He actually has a gravestone, but he's going to talk about many of the people in the blocks at the back of the cemetery where the black people were buried, and he's going to try and tell their story.
Chip Cartwright, a retired U.S. Forest Service district ranger and forest supervisor, will perform Richard Banks.
Knowing his history, I'm going to come across as someone who at one time wound up being the only, in the term that he used, colored person left in Eureka Springs.
Richard Banks was born in 1914, died in 1975, and settled in Eureka with extended family who, along with dozens of other black families, purchased homes and established businesses in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. They were among the few families who remained in town after Eureka's spa economy collapsed during the Great Depression. Banks built a small cottage on the edge of town where he lived until his death.
He needed a quiet place to be able to retire to where he felt safe. And so he built that place all by himself out there on Barrel Springs Curve on West 62. And main reason he did it was because he got to where he did not feel comfortable being in town after sundown.
Sundown towns, where blacks were forbidden to be seen after dark, were common across the South. Cartwright will convey the story about how Richard Banks prevailed and thrived. The hour-long guided tours take place at 20-minute intervals, beginning at 5:30 in the city cemetery. It begins tonight, then also Friday and Saturday this weekend, then again on Friday and Saturday, October 25th and 26th. Tickets are $15. Proceeds support the Eureka Springs Historical Museum. Details can be found on Facebook.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support provided by the City of Eureka Springs, featuring a variety of activities for the outdoor enthusiast of all ages. Eureka Springs is surrounded by various river and lake waterways, including Lake Leatherwood. This 1,600-acre city park is crisscrossed with hiking and biking trails and a spring-fed lake. Eureka Springs escape information available at eurekasprings.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Let's hear a musical instrument not often heard or seen in the Ozarks. that is the national instrument of India, the veena. It's a big instrument with, well, let's let the musician playing the veena, Nirmala Rajasankar, describe it.
A seven-stringed lute, if you may. But just imagine a mandolin with a really big bulb on one side, a big gourd, and on the other side, another supporting gourd. So a bit like the sitar, and seven strings with a big fretboard. So you're thinking size of a cello, but laid like a person lying down. So that is what a veena looks like. It actually looks like a person lying down. And I believe the instrument was constructed based on a human being. There's 24 frets to replicate the, you know, the spinal cord. And so they say there's a lot of connection between this instrument and the human body.
Nirmala talked with us from her home in Minneapolis yesterday because Saturday night, she's part of a concert in Bentonville titled Prayag. Why that title?
Hi, I'm Sri Vidya Venkatasubramania.
She's with the Rave Cultural Foundation based in Northwest Arkansas, the sponsoring organization for Saturday night's concert, and came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio yesterday.
So Prayag actually in India is, it means confluence. It means when two rivers, generally, it's two rivers meeting. That's what Prayag is.
The concert at Old High Middle School in Bentonville will feature more than just the veena. Nirmala Rajasankar says she's collaborating for the first time with another well-known musician.
Along with me will be another fantastic artist from India, from Kolkata actually, and he plays the hammer dulcimer of India known as the santoor. Tarunji's instrument is very sweet. He has a lovely, lovely tone. He's a very accomplished, extremely senior artist, as in has been around the block for many, many times and tours the U.S. very regularly in other countries.
So the concert will be a musical Prayag, a confluence of Carnatic and Hindustani music. And Saturday night's concert will be unique.
I don't think there has ever been a veena and santoor jugalbandi. You know, like a jugalbandi meaning Prayag, meaning two styles coming together. It's like you speaking in English and I were to speak in Tamil and we would have a conversation.
And we understand each other.
Yes. Yes. And we understand each other.
And our audience understands us.
Because it's music,
yes,
you will.
Yes.
because if I spoke Tamil and, you know, half the audience will not understand, if you just spoke English, perhaps the other half doesn't understand. But because it's music, and music has this very broad appeal, because they are just the seven notes, whether whatever style of music it might be.
So that we can all understand each other and accept each other and know that music is a common glue that brings us all together. Even though we may be different, so we do celebrate the differences, but we also celebrate uniquely what we all as mankind have, which is music. And so that concert you're going to hear is going to be about 90 to 95% improvisation, highly improvisational in nature because the compositions are going to be created by us and we're going to improvise on stage with the energy that you all will bring to the auditorium.
The concert, Prayag, is Saturday night from 6 to 8 at Old High Middle School in Bentonville. Tickets are $20, $10 for students. And you can find out more at the Facebook page for the Rave Cultural Foundation. That's spelled R-A-V-E. And just ahead, more musical opportunities for all of us in the next few days. Leo Uribe and Antoinette Grajeda are with you next.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and I am joined now by Leah Uribe, an associate professor of music at the University of Arkansas. How are you?
Hi, Antoinette. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Did you get to go to Nobuntu?
I didn't. I missed
no.
it.
Oh. I got to go. It was really good.
I bet.
It was really
yes.
good. And what was nice is it was educational. So for our listeners from last week, we were talking about this event at Walton Arts Center. This a cappella women's group from Zimbabwe came, and it was just a really fun, cool event, you know, singing in different languages that I had no idea what they were, but it's still beautiful music.
That is amazing that we get to see those groups here in our, you know, city.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So more things coming this week. What do we got?
Well, I am super excited about activities at the University of Arkansas. because, you know, I'm all about diversity and women composers, and we don't get that all the time. Mm-mm. But this upcoming week, three concerts are featuring women composers. So I am excited about that. Starting with a trumpet recital by a guest artist, Mary Thornton. Dr. Thornton teaches in Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and she's coming to visit the trumpet studio at the university. She's going to be giving some master classes and then her recital on Thursday, October 17th at 6:15 p.m. She's going to be playing music by several composers, beautiful music by Manuel de Falla, which is a Spanish composer. Some of the movements of these seven popular Spanish songs are about dances from different areas in the country of Spain. Also a beautiful movement from Leonard Bernstein's Mass. And then here, Jennifer Higdon, which is, you know, interests me a lot. She's an American composer, one of the most acclaimed and most frequently performed living composers in this country. She's been nominated and has won Grammys, and she also won a Pulitzer Prize. Jennifer Higdon, trumpet songs as well, will be part of this program. So this is again on Thursday, October 17 at 6:15 p.m., Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Building. At the University of Arkansas. This is free and open to the public. Also, this is on October 17th as well, but at 7:30 p.m. Thursday. This is at the Faulkner Performing Arts Center at the University of Arkansas. And the title of this concert is Frozen in Time, an American Portrait. This is a Schola Cantorum, which is our main choir, mm-hmm. At the music department, conducted by Dr. Stephen Caldwell. And the program is really, really beautiful and is featuring two women composers, Florence Price and also Dale Trumbore. And also, you know, Florence Price is an Arkansas composer. Mm-hmm. She was born in Little Rock.
African-American.
African-American, the first one to be recognized as a symphonic composer, first female African-American composer. So that itself is such a treat to be able to find this music. These are from manuscripts from the University of Arkansas Special Collections in the library. So this is brand new music for everybody. Also in the program is William Grant Steele, which is, he was born in Mississippi, but he spent a great deal of his life in Little Rock, Arkansas. So he wrote this beautiful African-American inspired music, also, you know, in the style of the Romanticism style of the time for classical composers. He's known as the Dean of African-American Composers. So this is what is happening in this concert. It's really, really cool. So in this piece by William Grant Steele, he paints a portrait of a proud and industrious people. In an ode to his country, the title of this piece is Plain Chant for America. William Grant Steele paints a much different portrait of a conflicted American still grappling with racial injustice and civil rights violations. And this is interesting because in the same program, we have Dale Trumbore, which is a young composer from L.A., that composed the piece Breath in Hope in 2017 in response to the ongoing issue of police officers shooting unarmed black men. So it's this juxtaposition of two, American composers writing about really, really important issues and realities, both from different times. So these two pieces are separated 76 years and still very current today, similar mm-hmm. portraits. I wanted to talk a little bit about Dale Trumbore, the composer from L.A., she has been hailed by the New York Times for her soaring melodies and beguiling harmonies deployed with finesse. So the third concert at the University of Arkansas that includes also a woman composer is by the Trombone Quartet under the direction of Associate Professor Corey Mixdorf. This is free and open to the public on Wednesday, October 23rd at 7:30 p.m. and is going to feature trombone quartets, and also soloists with piano, and they are including a Canadian composer, Elizabeth Round, which is a very fairly well-known composer in the world of trombone playing. One more thing I wanted to highlight today is Christian Serrano Torres, cello player. He will be playing on October 18th, Friday, from 6 to 8 p.m., and this concert is called A Night of Cello Music at City Pump. This is City Pump in downtown Rogers, 623 West Walnut. And I just, I am fascinated always when classical instruments leave the concert hall and go places and reach out to people in different environments. And that's what Christian has been doing with his music, music of his own, music by other people. And just, you know, that connection with a new audience that, you know, Christian plays with Sona as well. So he's bridging worlds, and that is super important in our world.
He's so good. We're so glad to have him when he has time to stop by. Thank you, as always, for stopping by yourself.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing everybody in this concert.
Leah Uribe is an associate professor of music at the University of Arkansas.
Antoinette Grajeda is back on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large with another discussion. Knowing how to properly refer to a cultural group different from your own can be challenging. That conversation on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today we're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio with Donna Jones. Donna is Director of Recruitment and Outreach at the School of Art at the U of A. Nice to meet you.
Yes, you too, Pete. Thanks so much for having me today.
I'd like for you to, real quickly, of course, we're going to be talking about something, the opportunity for students coming up a little bit. Actually, the deadline is later this month. Director of Recruitment and Outreach, I would think of any school would be kind of a fun thing, but for the School of Art, describe what you do.
Oh, yes. So there is never a dull day, as you can imagine, at the School of Art. So part of my role incorporates meeting with prospective students, whether those are undergraduate students or graduate students. The other part of the role maintains our outreach partnerships. So that could be when we're doing a kids' night session at the Yvonne Richardson Center. It could be traveling across the state to talk about art education initiatives with teachers and different legislators. So there's really never a day that looks the exact same. And of course, we always get to connect with the students and the faculty and the staff at the School of Art and the university as well.
You know, recruitment for artists, does it work anywhere near the same? And I know we like to always relate things to sports, but recruiting a good baseball player that the U of A may know or something like that, is it kind of like that?
It's definitely like that. They definitely have different portfolios that they can bring in. And we also talk about writing, creative thinking, being able to express your ideas clearly, and also community engagement. You know, so our students in the Fulbright College, not just in the School of Art, we want them to not only be fantastic at their craft, in their design thinking skill sets, but also when they leave, be able to talk with different people about their work, combine their interests with other fields like, you know, engineering and history, and be able to become global citizens after they leave as well.
What we're talking about is called the School of Art Portfolio Day. This is coming up October 26th. What is this?
Great. So a lot of schools have portfolio days. Ours is centered around the fact that we want students to be able to come in and see what opportunities they have through our programs. So portfolio is sort of a way for students to show their work to our faculty. So they meet one-on-one with our faculty and our students to talk about what they're interested in, show us their works. But we also have a preview aspect to that day. So they get to come in, talk with faculty, our students, hear about summer study abroad opportunities. Talk about scholarships. So this year alone, we were able, because of the Walton Family Foundation endowment, to give out over $320,000 to art students alone. So that's another aspect of it. They also get to see all of our facilities. So our studios and ceramics, printmaking, sculpture, our painting, photography, printmaking, all of our areas in art history and art education, as well as the main fine arts galleries as well. So when they come in, they get to sort of experience the day in the life of an art student at the School of Art at the University of Arkansas.
My.
Yeah, and we also get to talk about the great community of Fayetteville, the surrounding Northwest Arkansas art scene, so they get a really well-rounded vision of what their life as a student would be like.
I'm betting you'd like to know who's going to show up.
So on our website, it is art.uark.edu. So that's art.uark.edu. There's a large image that broadly says Portfolio Day. And if you click on that, you go straight to our registration form and you can fill out all the information that you'd like us to know about participating that day.
Donna Jones, Director of Recruitment and Outreach at the School of Art at the U of A. Thanks for letting us know about it.
Thank you so much.
As always, if something neat in your neighborhood is taking place, I'd like to know. You can email me. That's Pete@KUAF.com. 91.3 and the Community Spotlight. Local matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this month, Gene Bealey, a California-based journalist, came to Fayetteville as a guest of the Clinton House Museum as part of the exhibit 1968, A Folsom Redemption. The exhibit at the museum lasts through Sunday, and it explores the legendary concert inside Folsom Prison by Johnny Cash. Bealey was there, as well as at the previous evening's rehearsal by the musicians. He also came to the Carver Center for Public Radio while he was here to talk about the events and the exhibit that includes some of the pictures he took then. We played a few highlights from the conversation a couple of weeks ago, but as the exhibit enters its final days in Northwest Arkansas, we wanted to share more from the discussion. Gene says before the Folsom Prison concert, that is credited with eventually reviving Cash's career and helping people rethink what a live album could be, Johnny Cash's career was not in great shape.
Actually, he was really on the skids, to put it bluntly. He had just been arrested not too long before that for smuggling pep pills and his guitar across the Mexican border. And our local newspaper had written a lot of negative stories about him, like racing through town in his Cadillac. And at Christmas time, he had loud speakers atop his house outside of Ventura and Casita Springs blaring Christmas music. And some of the neighbors complained, and the sheriff came out and pulled the plug. And I think the headline was, Johnny Cash has a blue Christmas.
Oh, my God. So when you get, were you assigned the concert?
This is really important to know, that we're on a busman's holiday as freelancers. That became extremely important later on when we began selling the pictures, because like Dan and I had once interviewed Joe Rosenthal that took the raising of the flag picture, and because he was an employee of Associated Press, he didn't get any royalties off that picture, whereas we did because we were freelancers. So I want to make that very clear.
So you're freelancers. What was the impetus? You didn't have an idea that this would become iconic, did you?
Actually, we thought it was like going to a county fair. No one had any idea that it would be historic. And it was a case of John's good friend, the Reverend Floyd Gressett. His hobby was ministering to the prisoners in California. And there was a DJ at Folsom Prison by the name of, Earl Green, who found out that Reverend Gressett was good friends with Johnny Cash. And he encouraged him to get him back to Folsom Prison, because a lot of people don't know, this was the second time he had been at Folsom Prison. The first time was not very successful. In fact, I think it was outdoors, and I believe it rained that day. So everyone has forgotten that one. And John started to want to do the Folsom Prison thing, and Columbia executives weren't too excited about it until a new producer came in by the name of Bob Johnston. And so between them and working through Reverend Floyd Gressett, and the recreation director at Folsom Prison, they made it happen. You might wonder how we got invited.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting, because Dan and I used to do a lot of national magazine stories in our off time, like for Boys Life and Parents Magazine and so forth, like of a DA in Ventura County who had 12 adopted children. That was one of my favorites. But one night I got a call from Dan saying, Gene, we've been invited to go to Folsom Prison with Johnny Cash. And Dan was pretty far out guy. And I was more conservative. And I said, well, Dan, who invited us? He says, well, I was at this New Year's Eve party, and I met his best friend, a minister. Well, that sounded pretty far out. So I said, well, I'd kind of like to meet the minister before we go. He says, oh, okay, I can arrange that, which he did. So Reverend Gressett said that Cash and June Carter were coming to town to visit with his parents before they went to Folsom Prison. And Dan was working that day, so I was a photographer and writer.
Oh, wow.
So I went out to meet him at his parents' house, and he wasn't there at first, and he had taken a walk with June. So the first time I saw him, he was coming down the country road dressed like a movie star that just stepped off the screen, with a turtleneck sweater, blue blazer. I mean, it's just, I can see it as clear as yesterday. So from there, I just started asking him if he would cooperate with me to take pictures with his nephew, who is about 6 years old, Timmy Hancock. And so I just tried to show him as an uncle rather than a singing star. So I took pictures like out swinging the nephew in the backyard. And then the one that became my favorite is John sitting at the kitchen table arm wrestling Timmy. And there's a January calendar in the background. Little did I know that that would become so significant. And that was in the Johnny Cash calendar last year with on a brown trout calendar that sells worldwide. Mm. And they chose that along with several other pictures we had.
What? So did that convince you that, yes, I can go with Daniel into Folsom Prison?
Well, it was just a case of him saying, meet June and me at PSA Airlines in Los Angeles at such a time and to fly to Sacramento. And in those days, the round-trip airline ticket was about $35, so a low-paid reporter could afford to do that. Mm-hmm. So we actually traveled with him on the old PSA Airlines to Sacramento and stayed with him at the El Rancho Hotel. And, of course, I thought a big star would be staying at a fancy hotel. It was a pretty rundown hotel. And I learned that John was frugal.
Interesting.
Yes. And I later saw signs that where he was the leader of the band, like at the rehearsal, when the Statler brothers were always goofing off. They were like high school kids.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. 1968. Right.
And, you know, he'd have to tell them to calm down. Wow. get back to work.
He was sort of the paternal figure.
Right. So when they did the rehearsal that night on January 12th, before we went the next day to Folsom, I was the only one who recorded it. And I can tell you some backstories if you want.
Give us a couple. Yes, absolutely.
Well, like any...
Where's the rehearsal? Is it taking place at the El Rancho?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In a room?
It was just kind of a big room, you know, like all hotels have. And they have either, you know, how hotels have sliding doors on that.
Yeah.
So I peeked around the door there, and the governor's ball was going on with Governor Reagan. And Shirley Temple Black was walking in with her husband. Well, my first job out of college was promoting the opening of the Stanford Bank. And so she saw me. She was on the board of directors for the Stanford Bank. She saw me. She said, Gene, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm here with Johnny Cash. Would you like to meet him? Oh, yeah. So now I'm telling you about the greatest failure in my life is I didn't take a picture of Shirley Black with a man in black.
But you introduced Shirley Temple to Johnny Cash.
Yes.
Okay. I'm not going to, that so doesn't go in the category of failure. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you my next failure.
Okay.
Is I made the mistake of going to the bathroom, and when I came back, they said, Gene, you missed the, Governor Reagan was here. And so apparently Shirley Black had gotten Governor Reagan to come in and talk with John.
Wow. Okay, and this is before the rehearsal, or is this during?
During the rehearsal, they broke in. You know, all this was happening. Well, it was just a case of all this interaction was going on, and there were no pictures of it.
But there's the audio. Were they actually getting the song list down, the set list?
Yes.
Was there, and that was Johnny's choice, right?
I'm not an expert to comment on what he was thinking.
Sure, of course.
You know, but we can talk about the discovery of Greystone Chapel, mm-hmm. if you like, because we were sitting around in a motel room waiting for the rest of the band to get there from Nashville, and he was nervous, really nervous, about the snow conditions, winter conditions in Nashville. Maybe they wouldn't even be able to get out of there. So Reverend Gressett said, John, I know you've been busy and I didn't want to bother you, but I got this demo tape here I'd really like for you to listen to. And he said, well, who's it by or what is it? He said, well, it's written by an inmate at Folsom Prison that's in there for life on armed robbery. And he says, well, who's got a, anybody got a tape recorder? Of course, I raised my hand.
And was it a reel-to-reel? Or
yeah.
Was it,
it was a big old reel-to-reel Sony tape recorder.
Yeah.
So he said, well, go get it. So I did, and we slapped that little demo tape on there. And when it started playing, it was Greystone Chapel. And when he started playing it, I blurted out, John, if they let this guy out of prison, he'll put you out of business. And I thought, who am I, a 28-year-old nothing, to tell Johnny Cash something like that? And later, he kind of learned to put up with my brash comments like that. And to fast forward, when he did his Madison Square Garden show, he mentioned me, another one of my brash comments. He said when they took their whole band to Vietnam, he says, I got this reporter friend that said, doesn't that make you a hawk? And he says, well, when you go in to entertain the boys in the hospital, maybe a dove with claws.
Oh, wow. What did you wear to go into Folsom Prison? Did you think about what you were going to wear?
Well, we were told not to wear, like, Levi's and certain things like that, that the any colors that the prisoners wear. And so I got to tell you another little cute backstory.
Please.
Once time when I applied for a job at Comcast, they took me in a room, the interviewer took me in a room and said, well, we've done our due diligence and we found out that you did time in Folsom Prison. And I laughed hilariously and I said, well, yeah, one day with Johnny Cash. And I said, I hope you didn't pay that company too much.
So what was the energy like in the room? I mean, we've heard the record. We know the record's been produced and whatnot. But
I guess it was between the atom bomb and the H-bomb. And I think DJ from Los Angeles, Hugh Cherry, was responsible for a lot of that because he gave an intro that told the prisoners that they were free to yell and scream and do, you know, express their emotions. And I doubt whether they have any chance like that very many times. And so they were whooping it up. And I was kind of afraid that there might be a riot. I mean, what was to prevent them from grabbing, say, John's father, Ray Cash, and myself? And then I looked up and saw the guards up above with their long rifles, and I relax more. But if you look at one picture of the audience with all the prisoners there, you'll see me sitting in the front row with John Cash, and that's why Comcast had the picture to prove it. But if you look closer, we're wearing different color clothes. That's the only distinction. And maybe the others are wearing their prison caps.
Yeah. What was the conversation like? What were the conversations like before and after that you and Daniel had? Before the concert, did you have strategy? Did you talk about it? And then afterwards, did you look at each other and go, oh, my gosh, that was amazing? Or
no, but, you know, something. I mean, when you're working journalists and photographers, you just shoot the photos. And I did tell Dan to take some of the pictures. I was kind of director on some of it. But, you know, you just do your job and hope it comes out right. You know, it's every assignment is uncertain, and you have no idea that's going to be historic 50 years later. I'm going to be talking to you 50 years later in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Right.
But it's been one day in my life that's changed my life, but I don't want it to define my life. Because I've done so many, I've been so fortunate to do so many other things. I've been a serial entrepreneur and had other businesses. I've had a game business, a robot business.
Business?
An entertainment robot business, yes, where we made robots just before Star Wars. Timing is everything, you know.
Yeah.
And
I can write. You
say the phrase entertainment robot business like everyone should know what that is. What is an entertainment robot business?
Well,
from the 1970s.
The first one we made out of a water barrel for a body and Sweetheart cup dispensers and a tray for arms, and it dispensed drinks. So Newsweek magazine called it the drink droid, but I just couldn't sell that. It was the first robot sold through a retail store in Beverly Hills, no less, for about $6,000 or $7,000. But I just couldn't sell that in good conscience with a robot with a water barrel for a body. So I made the first fiberglass robot.
Gene Bealey was in Fayetteville earlier this month as a guest of the Clinton House Museum in conjunction with the exhibit 1968 of Folsom Redemption. That exhibit is at the museum through Sunday. You can learn more at clintonhousemuseum.org.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. On the show today, details of a new private equity fund forming in Arkansas. It is based in Little Rock, but has a heavy dose of influence from Northwest Arkansas. Plus, details of a new history exhibit in Fort Smith that tells the story of one of the city's most recognizable companies. We've got those stories and more today on the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Stick around after the break. We will be right back.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Over the weekend at NWABusinessJournal.com, we reported details of a new private equity firm forming in Arkansas called Natural Capital. The company will focus on investing in regional private investment funds, real estate, and operating companies, primarily in Arkansas and the American Heartland. Former Arkansas Development Finance Authority executive Brad Henry is leading the new firm as the managing partner and is responsible for the firm's day-to-day operations. A trio of Northwest Arkansas business leaders are also co-founders, Brock Gearhart, Marshall Savers, and Todd Simmons. Gearhart is the president and owner of Fayetteville investment advisory firm Greenwood Gearhart. Savers is president of commercial real estate investment firm Cushman & Wakefield Sage Partners in Rogers. And Simmons is the CEO and vice chairman of Siloam Springs-based Simmons Foods. All of the co-founders are Arkansas natives. In an interview I had last week with Brad Henry, he said Natural Capital is a response to the growing interest in Arkansas investments by other U.S. funds, specifically from the East and West Coasts.
We see the Heartland really as, you know, the South and the Midwest. And there's, you know, that's a growing region of the United States. And there are plenty of opportunities for private companies and private real estate there that aren't being focused on by coastal investment firms. And we feel like there's opportunities there, as well as here in Arkansas, as the capital markets continue to mature here in the state.
Right. How long has it been an idea that you've been kind of kicking around?
Gosh, we've been kicking this around for really a few years, just kind of talking among the four of us as friends. And the more and more we talked about it, the more our investment thesis really aligned together. And so we said, well, let's do it. Let's really do this instead of talk about it. And so about 8 months ago is when we really started putting the plan together. And then about 2 months ago is when we formally launched and launched the firm and the fund.
Right. So you're co-founder. You're the managing director. You'll be based in Little Rock.
That's right.
Little Rock firm. You'll be handling the day-to-day operations. But your co-founders, three Northwest Arkansas business and Marshall Savers at Cushman Wakefield Sage Partners, Brock Gerhardt at Greenwood Gerhardt in Fayetteville, and Todd Simmons, who is the CEO of Simmons Foods. What, kind of tell me what the what those guys all bring to the table and what, sure. what you think makes this a unique private equity firm with
right.
the four of you.
Well, first and foremost, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and we're all Arkansas guys, Arkansas families. You know, we've been here multiple generations. And we feel like we have a long-term outlook for the state, very positive outlook for the state and the region. And then our professional backgrounds really bring a team together that we feel like is unique in both the state and the region. So my background, as you said, you know, for the last 5.5 years was with the Arkansas Development Finance Authority. I managed the state's venture capital fund and economic development lending fund. Of course, Todd is CEO of Simmons Foods, great operator, 20 plus years of operating experience. Marshall is one of the leading real estate executives here in the state, so that provides us, you know, fantastic view into the real estate markets both here and throughout the region. And then with Brock's public market experience, really feels like it rounds out a team that we can deploy a diversified private investment strategy for us and our partners.
Right. So you've got this company now that's going to be, like we said, headquartered in Little Rock, and you're leading the day-to-day
that's
operations
right.
there. The remaining co-founders in Northwest Arkansas with their prospective companies, but you wanted to stress this is a statewide initiative with lots of statewide opportunities, not just Northwest Arkansas and Central Arkansas.
That's right. You know, we expect to see, hope to see opportunities all throughout the state. In my time with the state of Arkansas, I spent a lot of time driving back roads in the state looking for ways to grow the state's economy in all corners of the state. So we're excited to get out, let people know about the firm so we can start seeing opportunities, whether it be in Jonesboro, North Arkansas, Southern Arkansas, and Central Arkansas too.
Right, and so you're actively raising money, and you recently just closed your first acquisition, the old Doctors Hospital there on
That's
University
right.
in Little Rock, now the Doctors Building. Tell us a little bit about that property, why you think that's a good asset to start building your portfolio.
We really think it's a perfect first investment for natural capital. It is, for those that are in Little Rock, just about everybody in the city has probably been in there at some point. Mm-hmm. There's 50-plus physician groups there providing all forms of care. I was actually born in the building.
Right.
and my children's pediatrician's there. There's just a lot of connecting point. And so to be able to purchase a 220,000-square-foot building, 8-story building there right in the middle of town, right around a ton of, you know, 30-plus million redevelopment that's going on in that area of town, a mile from St. Vincent, across street from St. Vincent, excuse me, a mile from UAMS and 1.5 miles from Baptist. It, you know, we think as we invest into the building, and we expect that it'll have a really strong impact in the city and the region as well, and that's really important to us too. So we feel very excited that we can have a major impact with that building and be able to invest into it and be something that the community is very proud of.
Natural Capital has raised nearly $16 million for its private equity fund, according to a Form D filing it made October 3rd with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The date of the first sale was September 18th, and the total offering amount is $100 million. The number of investors was not disclosed. For more of my interview with Brad Henry, plus a story on the new private equity firm Natural Capital, be sure and visit our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. In Fort Smith, the history of one of the city's most recognizable companies will be on display through late summer 2020 at the Fort Smith Museum of History. The exhibit showcases the history of ArcBest and its less-than-truckload carrier, ABF Freight, illustrating the company's innovations in its first century of business. The museum hosted an opening reception recently for the new exhibit, which is called The ArcBest Story, A Century of Innovation. Since it was founded as a Fort Smith freight hauler in 1923, the company has transformed into a full-scale provider of end-to-end supply chain services designed to help customers solve all their logistical challenges. In 1935, the business had 2 trucks and 10 employees. Today, the company has 13,000 employees at 240 locations, with 1,600 employees in its 2 Fort Smith offices. And with Halloween just right around the corner, retailers are gearing up for a busy season of sales. The National Retail Federation expects U.S. merchandising to top $8.8 billion this Halloween. That's broken down into sales for costumes, candy, decorations, and even greeting cards. And Halloween is not just a child's holiday. The NRF survey found 5 million adults plan to celebrate by dressing up in costumes. And even more consumers are also getting their pets involved. This year's survey found 29 million people will dress up their pets in costumes for Halloween. The top choices are pumpkins, hot dogs, superheroes, bumblebees, cats, witches, and lions. Those are just a few of the stories we reported online within the past few days. Remember, you can follow our reporting on business news each and every day at both nwabusinessjournal.com and at talkbusiness.net. We are glad you joined us today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
The Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow will host writer Anne Catherine Kelly as the featured reader during the next Poet Luck event Saturday. Local writers are invited to read after the featured writers. The event is free. It's open to the public. If you'd like more information, Writers' Colony on Facebook.
The University of Arkansas Theater presents Tartuffe, October 18th through the 27th at the University Theater in Fayetteville. Also known as The Imposter, this classic satire about a man fooled by a duplicitous house guest has delighted audiences for more than 3 centuries. 575-4752 or uarkartstickets.com for tickets or more information. Little Wing Productions presents American singer-songwriter Don McLean and his Bye Bye Miss American Pie tour to the Auditorium in Eureka Springs on Friday, October 18th. This Songwriter Hall of Fame inductee is known for songs Vincent, Starry Starry Night, and I Love You So, and others. 888-695-0888 or theauditorium.org for tickets and information.
Contributors to this Thursday edition of Ozarks included Antoinette Grajeda and Jacqueline Froelich, who provided information about flu vaccines and the city cemetery in Eureka Springs. Timothy Dennis mastered our show, the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal with Paul Gatling, part of our collaboration with Talk Business and Politics. Additional content provided by KUAR, Public Radio in Little Rock. Our thanks yesterday to another partner, KASU in Jonesboro, for help. Our theme written and performed by Daryl Sean. Community Spotlight produced by Pete Hartman. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Cane Hill. 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. We will end with music from Will Gunselman. The song is titled Dixie Queen. He'll be at Brews and Tunes Oktoberfest on Saturday. Thanks so much for listening. My Dixie Queen.
Nothing's gonna get me, darling. Well, I'm out of this place in no normal sort of way. Yeah, nothing is gonna bring me down. I won't be here, I'll be far or somewhere in between. I'm gonna find my Dixie Queen.